Hi, I'm Josh, and I think one of the most emotionally affecting kills in Friday the 13th is Kevin Bacon's death scene. I mean, like, he's just had his orgasmic tremors. He's feeling like footloose and fancy free. And then, like, the next minute, there's a mystic river of blood just pouring down his chest, turning him into a hollow man. X-Men.
Well played, sir. Hey, I'm Matt, and, you know, we mentioned when we said we were going to do this series again that we had done it once before, and I didn't remember a lot of the things specifically because they all kind of blur together, but I did remember that watching Friday the 13th as a series for the first time did teach me that to the woman with an arrow, every problem looks like Kevin Bacon's neck.
I also do, like, revisiting, oh, this is Charlie and Austin, The thing that is really fun about revisiting a series like this, even though you have a lot of familiarity and memories, and some memories are a little blurry and this, that, whatever else, what I do love is that even coming back to this, I'm able to revisit in a really kind of a fun way, what I do really enjoy is in 3, that, like, there's, like, the biker gang, but they're, like, about as threatening as the Carpenters. Like, it was just like, it's so cute. Like,
they may, like, well have been carpenters on set.
God bless them. What I love is that I can think back to, especially with these ones, I can think back to early, you know, being a teenager, first time through kind of seeing things and that kind of stuff, and then having a totally different feeling than now. But what I love is even thinking back, going, like, even then, and being like, man, this is not like watching the Warriors. I mean, these guys are a little softer, you know, like, it's like, yeah. Well, fiddlesticks, he ran over my bicycle. Like, it's just like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're tough guys in a town of 50, sure.
Yeah, it's just like, so those little moments are just like, just incredibly enjoyable to go, like, just like get tickled by, like, oh, I wasn't buying this even then. That's great.
And actually, for this episode of the podcast, I'm my mom, and this is Horatio Hot Dog. So before we start talking about our short, I wonder if anybody wants to do like a 2025 wrap up. If there's,
oh my god,
any,
really? Amazing that you should anyone. Ask such a thing.
Holy shit!
Anyone? Does anybody
go ahead, Charlie?
No, I thought, you know, this being our first podcast of the new year, we should take a moment to acknowledge that that does make it awards season for 2025, and there's a lot of awards. Some of them have happened already, some of them haven't. But in case you might have missed a few of them, I just thought, I asked everybody on the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord what the best awards for the movies that they saw this year were. Weapons won 2 awards, actually. They got one for best contouring makeup and one for best Naruto run. The best horror movie I saw with children too young to watch it in the audience goes to Terrifier 3.
Oh god.
Worst horror movie I saw children too young in the audience, Five Nights at Freddy's 2. Most fetch movie, The Housemaid. And award for what looked like a ton of AI in a movie with no AI, The Conjuring Last Rites.
Yep.
And most Bud Limes in one movie goes to Final Destination. If you would like to find out just why all that happens and give me some of your own ideas for things that should have won very particular awards for 2025, you can also go to the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord, which has a Horatio Hot Dog sub channel. Will you find it? Who can say? Anyway, with that all being said, we can move on to the short.
I always want to ask you, oh, well, where can one find it? And then I remember that's part of the gag. I
steadfastly refuse. People find it, so clearly it's possible.
And that's when I saw the snide countenance of steadfastly refuse.
Yes.
Just any kind of adverbial phrase like that does lend itself to just being in Charles Dickens' name, I feel.
It does. Yeah. Oh yeah, shout out to Troy, Chris, Mr. Green, and Christian. I think those are all ones I got from those 4.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the Mr. Green from KOL. That's a good egg. That's a good guy, that guy.
Yeah. Good dude.
Oh, anyway, let's talk about this short, Playing God, Jugando al Dios. This is a 9-minute short in which there is a workbench where a motley assortment of clay creatures are.
Can we call them homunculi?
Yeah, homunculi.
Yeah.
Kind of twitching and moaning. And as we watch them, the sculptor comes in and grabs a new armature and slaps together a guy. And the guy tries to interact with the creator and tries to, realizes he wants to escape from the homunculi. So tries to pry his feet off of his base, and having done that, falls flat on his face, smashing him until he looks like all the other freaks on the table. This is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And then when I watched the making of short to see that they did all of that in camera, like sculpting the clay for each shot.
And the dude is also being stop motioned.
Yeah, and stop motioning. I love it when people do that. My
brain just broke. Me too. I was like, what?
Jeez. I think they said it took 7 years. Was that what they said?
7 years, like yeah. 12,000 frames.
Something like that. Yeah, it's astonishing. And just so like really that one woman that, doing yeah, it.
That someone has that particular mental illness, because it puts some amazing art into the world.
Hell yeah. Yeah, this is one. I can't remember how I stumbled across this one. But I just found it so moving and beautiful. And then in the last week, maybe, all the usual channels I find shorts through have just been bombarding me with this one, because it's now on the short list for an Oscar.
Oh, so, good.
Yeah, these guys are getting the recognition that I certainly think they deserve. So, yeah, good for them.
Yeah, no, it's very, very, very creatively impressive. You know, it's like, if you're going to be wiseacre about it, be like, okay, well, what is the bigger story? But I don't know that that's necessarily relevant. It's sort of, it plays almost more like a folk tale, kind of like that's sort of the, its framing is sort of like,
yeah, I think it's very much a parable.
Yeah. Like that's more what it feels like, which is perfectly acceptable. Like, it's just like, that's fine. It doesn't have to, everything doesn't have to follow the same narrative kind of structure. And that probably is benefited by that it is a short length, you know, and not because like, you know, Phil Tippett's a fucking genius and, you know, he's a creative powerhouse kind of a person. But, you know, when you watch Mad God, it's like, it's really, really amazing. But at a certain point, you do get a little weighed down.
I still haven't gotten past an hour.
It's where I start drifting. You just get worn down by it. It's just so much.
Yeah, and it's so impressive. And he's just such a creative force. But it's just like, so I do think that there's something to be said for, like, because I mean, I think about Laika and I think about things like Kubo the Two Strings, I think about Box Trolls, and I think about the things that they've done, and this new one that they're working on with the fucking birds, which is just like, it's just like, if you've seen any of the little behind the scenes things of what they're working on, it's just like, oh my gosh. But anyway, like, but those are, yes, they're technically amazing and they are, you know, their creativity is through the roof, but there is also a very strong plot component to all of the Laika things. And so you can be just amazed by the technical ability and all the creative stuff, but there is a story that's like part of its thing. And so I think that's where you can, and I hate saying get away with, 'cause it sounds so snide, but like, I think you can get away with having a feature length kind of a thing. Whereas like something like this works just fine, like in a parable sort of framing, because it is a shorter kind of thing. Also too, like, not for nothing, but like the sound in this too was way better than I would have expected it to be.
Yeah,
every part of it. Just the, I keep thinking of the, just the details of the animation too. Yeah, but well, I haven't thought about the, like, sound design.
Hordes of these little clay homunculi in various distressed states, all reacting in the background and like turning and quickly to look away so they don't get caught seeing things. But there's business.
Yeah,
those, different business happening on every one.
Yeah,
yeah, it's astonishing. Yeah, so cool. This is right up my alley.
My favorite little bit is they animate the sculptor sculpting the person onto the armature, but just not in the way that you actually sculpt. And I thought that was really fun, like animating this process that we're actually doing to create this thing. But he just like grabs a hunk of clay and tugs it down the leg and lets it go, and it springs into muscle.
Yeah, it's as like, though these things really have cool a thing. Shape that they want to return to. Mm-hmm. It's like when you stretch a rubber glove over your hand, you know, like snap, and then it's like the right shape of your hand, you know, and it's like, it's such an interesting choice because like when he does the thing, he just kind of rubs his thumbs down the from like chest to groin. And it creates like just a little bit of definition for like abs and pectoral and like just enough to make it like look like it wasn't perfect after one little swipe. And yet, you know, that the person that actually was sculpting that took hours to yeah. like fiddle around and get it just right. It's just, it's and a clever to way to make it expedient.
The other guy's hands from the thing so that they could actually do the sculpting. Jesus.
Crazy. Yeah.
Well, it reminded, that bit sort of reminded me a little bit of, excuse me, that bit sort of reminded me a little bit of the animation of, I don't know, the name is escaping me at the moment. The guy who did the California Raisins and just the name is escaping me at the moment. But
oh, the animator?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I cannot sure. think of his damn name, but it was. But it, and so the reason why I was thinking about that was like the guy. It'll come to me eventually, but the. Some of the things that they Will Vinton, Christ on a fucking there cracker. There you go, Will Vinton.
Hey, still faster than I could Google. You still got it, buddy.
Yeah. Well, it was in there somewhere. I just had to get the little man with a cart to get moving. But like, and so it reminded me a little bit of Will Vinton because, like, you know, a lot of the Will Vinton animations that he, you know, he did where you had. You know, of course, California Raisins, and then of course he did like all the old Domino commercials with the Noid, and then he did Claymation Christmas and Kremlin, you know, all those different ones that he did. So, you know, there's always this little bit of like macabre sort of glee at times with some of the animations and some of the little shorts and things. There was always a little bit of like something a little off. Where it was like something would scale me, something would get their face smacked in a way, and it'd be like, wait, and it'd be like kind of stretching away, like, ah, that's,
oh, sure.
that's yeah. off-putting for a moment. And so it had that little bit of extra humor kind of twinge to it. And so, like, that bit where he was doing the thing with the feet and then the dick, too, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
kind of reminded me of that Will Vinton kind of thing, which I think, I'm pretty sure I've told you guys that when I was growing up, our family friends, John Alberti, who did all the Winstone sculptures and all that kind of stuff, he used to build armatures for things, and he did the one for the librarian in Ghostbusters. He built the thing that when you pull this lever and then it goes rah. He built that, and then he did all the armatures for the California Raisins. So like, when I was a kid, there's like my parents have them. I don't have them, but there's pictures of me when I was like, you know, about Joe's age, a little older, with like King Kong's arm from Son of Kong with Jeff Bridges. Like there's I'm like standing next to his arm, and then there's like all the little armatures and little, because they're freaky as shit looking when they don't have stuff.
Oh sure,
them.
Yeah.
And like all these little armature things, these little creatures and shit. A couple California Raisins, and there's like whatever. So like there's these pictures of me as a kid with all this crap around me. So like watching that part of this animation of this did give me kind of a warm and fuzzy, because like I said, it reminded me of that just the offness of a Will Vinton kind of a animation too.
I do think just that this would just be a really beautiful kind of art thing, except for the story that's in it. And so, and that makes it an actual moving, like emotional thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, I think it's important to point out that like, it would be a really pretty short if it didn't have that, but with it, it is, I think it's kind of next level. It made me think about my position in the universe.
Yeah. I do run across things sometimes that are essentially just someone's reel, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll see like, oh, you know, new blah, blah, blah from so-and-so. And it's like, oh, cool. And it's just like five neat ideas they have, and they just kind of show it to you. And it's like, ah, and like this could have very easily just sort of been that, where it's like one of those things where, oh, we're going to watch the creator sit down and make a thing and play with it a little bit, like that old, you know, there's a couple Looney Tunes cartoons like that where the pencil comes in, or maybe Tom and Jerry. And like, those are fun, but there's not a lot there. It doesn't say anything about the relationship between creator and created usually, or not a ton. And so this one though is just like, oh, this is just all the big, you know, the big question of the universe just in microcosm. And like, that's pretty rad.
Yes. So I say, watch it now.
Yeah, me Me too.
Yeah, it's a nifty deal.
Watch it now so you can be that cool person at the party that knew about it before the awards.
And make sure you tell everyone.
Oh, yeah.
That's the important part.
That too.
Well, no. It's important you tell them that you saw it before everybody knew about it. That's even...
That's part critical. Of the telling. Yeah. It's like, hey, I saw this a long time ago and it was really cool. And maybe you've never heard of it, but... That always convinced people to check out bands I liked when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Ooh, something I've never heard of?
Me. Oh, and you found about it earlier? You must be the coolest guy in my... What? I can't even think of the name of a high school class. That's how much attention I paid. Okay, cool.
All right, so we're going to talk about our Friday the 13th rewatch, or Jueves el Décimo Tercera. That's going to be fun to say all the goddamn time. Décimo tercera.
Wait, isn't Jueves Thursday?
Viernes.
Oh, I thought you said Jueves.
Your pollos have come home to roost, Joshua.
No, it's Viernes, you know, like the sauce that you put on.
Well, no, that's what I thought. I just thought you'd said the wrong day. I'm like, wait, he's been doing Spanish
But like the odds of you going back to listen to see.
Oh, right.
You've done it once for spite, I remember.
Oh, that's entirely possible. Spite is a great motivator.
It is a powerful motivator.
That's probably why I was so scared this time, because I'm not used to interrupting with
I really enjoy that around, if you get around on the holidays around your religious family members, or else you can also share a round of cranberry spite.
Lemon. Brilliant.
Anyway, Friday the 13th.
It's
a movie.
You Maybe know who is particularly spiteful is Pamela Voorhees, I feel.
Yes, she is.
So imagine that you make a movie about a woman who kills people because they neglected and killed her baby, right? And then for the next movie, you got a completely different like talent behind the camera, you know, writing and directing, and now it's about the baby who is now grown up and is the killing man. And then they continue to do that for most of 12 films. Sometimes it's not you, but other times it is. Like, yeah. I just find that this origin for this franchise fascinating. Like, a middle-aged woman killed some people and got killed at the end.
Yeah, it is the most unlikely successful slasher. Yeah. And it's probably because everybody thinks of it as guy in hockey mask with machete, right? But like, this had to do so well that there was time to make that movie. And it certainly did. I mean, what, 60 some million off of like a half a million budget?
Yeah.
Like, you know, undeniably a success. But like, yeah, when you put it in bare terms like that, like angry mom in a sweater kills a bunch of teenagers, that's not the most compelling elevator pitch for your slasher movie.
But I guess for most of the movie, you're not watching a middle-aged woman in a sweater killing people. You're watching someone you can't see kill people.
Yeah, we start in POV with this.
And I think that's maybe why it works. Yeah,
that was another thing that going back, we were talking before about going back and revisiting these, and sometimes it's been for longer than others with certain episodes, whatever, certain parts of it. But it's like, what's fascinating is when you get to watch it with current eyes, you go like it's the Texas Chainsaw phenomenon, where I was talking to my mom years ago about Texas Chainsaw, which is one of my all time favorite horror movies. And she started to say the thing, not in a mean way, but she's like, oh, it's so violent and this, that, whatever else. I said, well, that's the thing, is that people think that it is, but it's actually like the majority of anything that occurs, it doesn't occur in camera is the thing. Like, it's not, it's a lot more of the theater of the mind kind of a thing. Like, Toby Hooper was kind of, he's half nuts on a good day, but he was kind of, that was sort of his thing. And so, like, it's interesting to watch these back through and kind of be scrutinizing or looking closer, because like, there were quite a few of the kills that I'm like, I swear to God, I watched that person get stabulated 10 weeks till Tuesday, but what happens is they turn on and go, ah, and then like nothing is shown, and you're like, but I swear that was,
and then they don't even find the body for like 40 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
And then they're just like tucked in a closet with a little bit of blood or something. Yeah. And you're like, that's, I mean, the Kevin Bacon one obviously is pretty graphic, but like, yeah, a lot of this is not, it's weird. Cause this is just the one where like, hey, what are you watching? Friday the 13th. Ugh. Just people getting hacked to pieces. And it's like, it's not though.
Well, that's, that was the other thing I want to make sure. I want to really get your all, you know, unless I'm being too much of a ninny, but like going back and watching these three again, like even though I know them, I've seen them, whatever, there's moments in each one of these that I still go, yeah, Like, you kind of get a little bit, maybe it's kind of like camp counselor for like 3.5 years or whatever. So I'm like,
oh, that'll do it.
The idea of being in a remote location, these kind of things, and like what the bathrooms are like at nighttime and all this kind of stuff. But there were moments in each one of these where I went, yeah, got a little nervy. And I was like, well, I know what's going to fucking happen. Like, yeah. I'm being silly.
Yeah. I mean, not to give away too much, but like, having watched these first three after such a long gap, the one of the things that I kind of kept realizing was like, I'm really just honestly enjoying this. This is just fun. And there is something, I know I talked recently about how like I have trouble with like low budget modern horror because it looks too much like high def TV stuff. And it just doesn't, something about that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And watching these, I was like, yeah, this is just different. And maybe it's that this is stuff. It feels wrong to say that this stuff is done without cynicism, because like, this is a movie that was sold based on a title a year before it came out, and they had 1 year to write it and make it. Like, so that's relatively cynical in its beginnings, but like we said early, maybe off mic, like these are people just kind of throwing a bunch of shit at the screen and hoping it'll become a movie somehow. And there's something charming about that. And so like, your teenagers are sort of shitty, but not in like the way we come to think of them when we talk about Nightmare on Elm Street kids versus Friday the 13th kids. They're just teenagers.
Yeah.
And like, that just makes sense. You're like, and yeah, they're kind of flaky and not paying attention. There's also the fact that, yeah, by the time you get to part three, I think I have a note here. We'll see when we get to it. I was like, how old are these people supposed to be? Because like, I can't tell. Like, so one of them says she came from college, but that dude's got to be 40. Like, what's going on? And the 80s always had like 26-year-old teenagers, but there is just something kind of fun about these dipshits running around acting like dorks, because like, they just don't.
So a couple of things, like, I think for one, the craft level of on these is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
the cinematography, like, you can see what's happening. The special effects are Tom Savini, so they always look pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. Like, the acting is fine. You know, I think partly just having seen a lot of the lower rent, amazingly enough, ripoffs of Friday the 13th made me expect like a trauma level of just like tits and blah, I mean, yeah. And it's just not that. It's
well, this is the first generation VHS copy. It's still like not that different than Halloween. A little dumber, a little sillier. But like, yeah, like once you get 2 years later, a lot of the also rans get pretty dismal.
But then you also have this. Oh, no, it was in my head. Mm-hmm. No, it's got to stay. I want to take. Oh, the ability to keep cranking these out is because of a kind of genius construction where you don't have to have people organizing and fighting back against Jason, because they never really know what's going on until almost the end.
Yeah, it's people are just missing for a lot of it.
Yeah, like, it's not being really chased by Jason as a group for most of the movie. It's not even knowing that he's there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that, especially like, that I compare that to this time through the Nightmare series. I was really struck by Nightmare 4, where they have a funeral every 5 fucking minutes. Because there are 5 people that they have to dig through before they even get to their core group of people, and then they start doing them, and it's always like the death and the discovery of the body and the funeral. And this just gets to be little short vignettes about people in their lives, and some of them are kind of interesting, right?
Yeah.
And then Jason just comes in and ends the scene.
And scene. Chuck.
Yeah, like, it's a pretty good setup for a movie. You know, you end up with like these people that we can almost like, and some of them we like more than others. I really liked Annie at the very beginning. She seemed like she was just, it's like a fun person to hang out with, and then you go, oh, but you're doomed.
I was also, one of my notes too was like, she gets killed in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
That does not happen much in horror movies like today, much less back then. Like, I was just kind of struck by that, where it's like one of those little things that made me go, oh, this is actually doing something a little more interesting than I would have given it credit for. And again, that may be just through, they didn't know what they were doing, and that was just how they were able to justify that scene taking place was during the day or whatever. Or maybe that was them trying to like show you you're never safe or whatever. Who knows? But like, it just is one more thing that makes this that little bit better than a lot of the ones that we've forgotten about, you know? I do have a couple questions from stuff early on, though. I'm hoping you guys are smarter than me. I know you guys are smarter. I'm hoping you know the answers, though.
One other thing that's going to pop up in 2 and 3 especially, that I think is actually super critical, which is that, like, and this is where your memory plays tricks on you, and you go back and revisit things. There's a lot of stuff from the late 70s, early 80s, where they get a lot of the 10,000 other slasher movies. There's a lot of Final Girl accidentally winning kind of stuff where, mm-hmm. like, it's just sort of like, I just happened to, you know, and it just happens to, and oh my gosh, please save me, oh, the vapors, and then like, oh, I accidentally won kind of stuff. And they don't give hide or mind to female characters worth a good goddamn. So one of the things that stuck out to me rewatching this time around is that these female leads in this, like, they fight back, and they're,
yeah,
they're not intuitive, not ingenious, that's not the word I'm looking for, but like, they're like, they're working towards surviving. Like, they're not, you know, like, there's a lot of ingenuity, is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, they're, and it's like, well, damn, man, like, I guess I don't really remember that was, you know, maybe just because you get so saturated by so many other of the schlocky kind of whatever, where you watch these through and you're like, oh, damn, man, yeah, like Alice is like actually like working, like trying to stay alive, and like she's not just being rescued, and it's not like kind of a thing, and they even bring it even more so in the other ones, and I was like, dang, that's well, stupid memory, why don't I remember that being like a really big part of this, like, well, son of a gun.
Speaking of things I didn't remember, Ralph, our harbinger.
Yeah, he is fucking the most harbinger to
that's
ever
the biggest
he's
one.
So good, he is so great. That's my note, is just Ralph is a great harbinger. I want to know what that guy's day is like.
You're doomed.
Like, he's the guy that, like, other movies are making fun of, I think, you know, like,
because he's so big. It's like,
it's so
big.
Broad, and it's so fun. And then, like, half a page down, I have the note, all caps, Ralph is back. He just hangs out in the pantry. I thought
he's
he was
like hiding
gone.
In the closet. Yeah.
I was so
come
fucking
out of
excited.
The closet, Ralph.
Come on, I was going to ask, speaking of questions, during the first kill, is the music being played actually the music from Psycho, or is that like a Temu version?
I do think it's an homage.
Is it? Because I was like, we all know the like bit and like some of the music, but like, and honestly, the music in this is pretty good. But there's a moment there where I went, hang on. Like, because it seemed plausible that you'd maybe pay for like a famous score to kind of give you a little extra zhuzh, but also you'd have to pay for that. And that kind of takes away that argument. So
that whole $650,000 budget.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I wasn't sure if that was just close.
Well, he talks about that in the documentary. I don't remember exactly.
I haven't seen that in years. Yeah.
So, but he talks about the whole thing of like, you know, the first thing of like coming up with the sound, and like, he kind of talks about developing that. But what I find so interesting is that like he, you know, there's only so much you can do of the thing. And then at a certain point, you're like, all right, we've got that down. So what else are you going to do with it? And so it gives you, like, almost like a jazz musician. Like, you're like, okay, I've hit the notes, but there's a lot of space in there. And so, you start to notice in these ones, I was kind of clued in on that a little bit. It's like, you can almost hear him kind of like, well, I'm going to add a little bit of this thing. And then he's never really big about it. He's not John Williams about it, but it's like he adds some stuff in there, little bits and pieces. I'm like, well, good. That's cool. Like,
yeah, when the score kind of swells during important moments, it's always a little different from the previous time. Like, he's trying different stuff to make sure the scene kind of has its own. And it's like, and again, that's just something that, like, in like the memory version of these, I don't give it credit for having that much thought put into it, but there it is, you know?
Yeah.
That scene where we kind of meet all the teens and they're sitting around singing songs with the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did I get like a different cut? Cause I didn't see anyone holding a gun to their heads and I couldn't figure out why they were doing that. Cause they're teens.
Cause you got to sing camp songs at a camp.
Pan in on that cabin. And I'm like, these guys are like into this. Like, and they're not even trying to impress anyone. Like, that's very
that
weird.
So fun singing. Michael Row the Boat Ashore. I can never say that right because of some comedian or some show where he was like, sure, I know American folk music. My goat knows the bowling score. Hallelujah. So I can never say that right. And if anybody else knows what that's from, let me know because it's been years.
Oh, yeah. another bit in the first one too. I would be remiss is the fucking strip monopoly.
Yes, so fucking.
The
ridiculous.
One thing that I really like about
but boy, this... have I played weird versions of games to try to get people to take their clothes off when I was but a
monopoly
teenager.
Though.
I mean, usually you wouldn't formalize it like that. You'd just be like, "Show me your tits" when rented to on Park Place.
That's true. Yeah.
That's actually one of the ways that I met my wife. Yeah. Moving on.
Render unto Park Place that which is titties.
Yeah.
that
which is titties.
That which is titties.
Careful, they're cold. So, no, one of the things that I really like about these movies, I was prepared for the gross, horny boys and the girls that kind of put up with them. Which is the kind of the 80s thing, or you have like the one slut, right?
Mm-hmm.
But these women are all just kind of healthily interested in sex and love.
Yeah, people seem pretty much on the same page.
It's a weird thing to find. Yeah, they're just like Kevin Bacon and his girlfriend. They just dig each other and so they want to fuck. It's not like,
yeah,
there's usually one weird horny guy, but yeah, there's usually several just couples that, you know, could make it, like they enjoy sex and they have sex and that's fine. And also we should point out that Jason really doesn't care if you're having sex or not.
Like, no, I think it's just a handy distraction.
Yeah, well, I also think that it's that same thing as like Captain Kirk being a womanizer,
right?
That is just based on the collective memory of the thing instead of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, everybody knows it's the movies where you get killed if you have sex. You know, he kills teenagers who have sex. Like, he kills old people and young people and children if he can get them, and a couple of deer and then, you know, a Ewok with a limp. Like, he will kill anything that he comes across. There are just usually teenagers nearby because it's a summer camp,
right?
And they are usually having sex because they're teenagers. It really struck me how just he is so equal opportunity destroyer. It's weird that he has that reputation.
That's, yeah, that there's that overlay of moralizing that, like, I think became more the story than it ever was the content, you know, like it was sort of, and there definitely were also rants for by the hundreds after this, you know, anywhere from the early to mid to late 80s where, like, I mean, there's absolutely some mean, bitter kind of pre-incel before they were a thing kind of dudes that probably produced or wrote or directed or made all kinds of ones that like yeah, I'll show them, like, yeah, that'll be the right thing, that'll be, and won't that be badass because, like, you know, she just wasn't such like a slut, and like, and that's the thing, but like,
yeah, the
but,
I
yeah.
spit on your grave kind of right. level.
Well, yeah, that's yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because yeah, that is another, that's yet another thing about this where you kind of go through it, like it is incidental and it is like, you know, like perfectly evidenced by, I forget which part of it is, but they kind of break for like, oh, we're gonna go to bed, we're gonna go upstairs, we're gonna do this, that, we're doing that, and like, a couple of them are still hanging out, you're doing whatever, and it's not like it doesn't become this big spectacle of being like, oh, they're gonna do blah blah blah, or oh, this thing, or oh, you know, like, get it, no, you know, it's good. None of that, yeah. Just not even part of, like, Revenge of the Nerds is 10 times. To 15 times grosser when it comes to that kind of thing than anything in any of these ones. And it's like, yet another cool thing about coming back to revisit these is that, like, it's like, oh yeah, that really wasn't a thing.
Yeah. Watching this, it made me think that, like, you know, yeah, I do think that when people go off away from the group to have sex, they probably got killed. I don't think it's because they had sex. I think it's because they voluntarily separated themselves from the herd.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also see that, you know, mid 80s, there's plenty of shitty moralizing going on in that era. So, you know, I'm sure like some comedian or some show made fun of these terrible movies saying, oh, and then you get killed for having sex. And then that just became the culture's version of it. And I bet they didn't fight that too hard to go, no, see, it's a morality tale. Our gory titty movies are fine for your kids to watch because really it's telling them that they shouldn't have premarital sex. Like, I could see a guy not working too hard to shake that off.
It's like this documentary about a nude beach that's right. of sociological that interest to
I've
everyone
worn the VHS out on. Yeah. Oh, speaking of stupid teenagers, I believe it's when Kevin Bacon's getting killed, his girlfriend is like, I'm gonna run to the bathroom or take a shower or something, right? And she goes into that like weird gross camp bathroom and she's fucking barefoot.
Yeah.
And that has so many questions and exclamations after it. Just goddamn barefoot in that bathroom. Like, and you know, you guys know me. I've worked in weird places and done gross things, but like, even me, I'm like, nah, hard no. I wore sandals to the showers at the Renaissance Festival every single time. Like, no.
So if Jason didn't, or Pamela didn't get her, it was going to be athlete's foot.
I guess, yeah, just that kind of. But in a camp like that, especially when it's been abandoned, that shit will probably crawl halfway up to your knee before you even realize you've got it. So,
yeah. Right? See, my big one when I was a camp counselor was in all the bathroom buildings were all, you know, they're 10,000 years old. And we always have like just metric fuck tons of daddy long legs. And oh, so, yeah. Like, and the lights would be out and the lights would turn on. And then there'd just be this pile of them. They all are like, they're like, boogie, 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 boogie,
yeah.
Boogie, 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 boogie.
And which is like, way less gross than cockroaches for some reason.
That's, yeah, cockroaches. Yeah, yeah, fuck you and your mother. But like, yeah. Those daddy long legs are just sort of like, and they're just sort of all of a sudden, they're just sort of like, and I grew with the thing, and I grew with the thing. And it's like, and so when, yeah, and this, you watch this one, they're like, well, where's like big bunches of daddy long legs up in the corners just having a little dance party? Like, it's like, we didn't have daddy long leg budget.
But instead, they have a snake in the bathroom in this movie that they chop up. And
they actually kill
fuck.
A real snake. Yeah,
you'd think I'd remember that for all the times people talk about animals actually getting killed in horror movies, and we always go, "Oh, Cannibal Holocaust," and this and that and the other. And it's like, no one ever brings up Friday the 13th, like because I certainly don't because I hadn't remembered that was part of it. And it just full stop, pause the movie, like, "Holy shit!" Rewind. Like, did they? Oh, they did. Okay, crazy. It's weird that doesn't get talked about more.
I wonder. I'm sure that all of that was scripted. It's just fun to imagine, like, no, they're just dating character when the snake showed up. And,
right. You know, or they were like, okay, there's going to be a snake. You guys all freak out or whatever. And like, okay, we're rigging the snake. Ah, my son's got one. Like, oh, here's $10 for your crying son.
Well, you know, the funny thing, whenever I think about that kind of shit, you mentioned Cannibal Holocaust, and that reminds me. So like, you know, it's pretty well documented, but Diodato talks about, you know, there's all the controversy about the killing of this thing and that thing, whatever else. Like, you know, he, first year of House Corps, he was one of the guests, of course, you know, before he passed away, you know, obviously. And he was an absolute character. Mark and I hung out with him a bunch that weekend, and you know, he speaks pretty good English. He just likes to pretend that he doesn't. So like, oh, sure. You know, so Jaretta was kind of like his translator, and like he absolutely spoke way more English than he let on, and it was very fun to watch him drive her nuts, because like if you've seen Demons, you're like, I don't fuck with that lady, but but so like, and but that's one of those questions that gets asked of him a lot of times, and he always kind of, in his very sort of Italian kind of way, he always kind of scoffs at this thing of being like, yeah, but people like eat like hamburgers and they eat grilled chicken and they have pork chops and like, I mean, okay, like I don't know. It's like, I'm not advocating like just going out and like torturing a bunch of puppies for fun in movies, but like it's one of those things. Like I think about that. I haven't really made up my mind about it. I don't think I ever will. But it's sort of like, it kind of does make an interesting point. Like in this situation, yeah, they killed a snake in like a real snake in this movie, and it's like, well, true, but like.
Or like 500,000 cows.
Well, it's like, but yeah, but so what's the,
you know,
yeah, nobody's out advocating. Like, what's the Paul Reiser joke about the dolphin save tuna, whatever else? They're like, oh, we gotta save the dolphins, or but this tuna, he's ugly ass little sons of bitches. Yeah, fuck them. We're gonna eat them all day long, but not this dolphin. This dolphin looks like your Uncle Murray, and it's just sort of like, and it is kind of funny in that way, because like it is. I mean, even with all that, watching this, and you see them go clunk. Like, you know, like that wasn't a prosthetic snake. That was like a snake snake. You still got to go, whoa. It's
like, well. No, for sure.
I just really enjoy seeing, like, given that the structure of the movie is some bullshit and then a kill, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever is happening in the some bullshit can be anything. It doesn't have to be people killing a snake. It could be something else. They could be playing ping pong. They could be, you know, skinny dipping, which they do a lot in the later movies, but like, it doesn't really matter. It's just, of all the gin joints in all the world, why did you go for snake? You know?
Yeah.
It's
gotta be like someone's actual camp experience or something, right? Like, oh,
hey, absolutely. Somebody had to say, like, oh God, there's a snake in there. And then one person
it scared the
shit
out of all of us. Like, oh, perfect. There's our jump scare. Like, yeah.
The other thing that's the other really big thing for this one, and for the first one anyway, is just, yeah, also just like how it is really neat to kind of watch that there was just probably a lot by accident, a lot of care and craft that went into it. But the other thing too that is important to mention this first one, and yeah, she shows up the second one, that is true. But like fucking Betsy Palmer, like she is a force. Like she has so much presence. Like once she's on and going, and it's just like, because you don't expect that to be the villain. Like you're not necessarily, you know.
Yeah, I think the choice there is brilliant.
Yeah, and it's like if she just has so much goddamn presence that it's like
she doesn't go big, you know.
Yeah, it's like still controlled.
She's not crazy lady, and that's usually how if a woman's got to be violent in a movie. Now it's not as much, but like they have to be crazy to get that. Violent.
Yeah, it's got to be over the top. It's got to be huge.
Yeah, and she's like, no, I'm pissed. okay, that's intense.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, like, I don't know, it's one of those deals. The last third of that movie, once she's kind of dead center, and it's just, like, the level of menace and threat, it's like, whoa. It's I don't know, it's pretty impressive to watch. I don't 100% know how they, I mean, maybe it was one of those things, like a lot of other, you know, kind of older actors where, you know, the parts become different, you know, and then the opportunities become different. And, you know, so maybe that was part of it. And so maybe it was like, you get somebody of her caliber just by virtue of the fact that, you know, they're just not throwing roles at her, it's really impressive. Like it really adds like that whole last third as you're watching, you know, Alice run around and kind of make, keep getting more data, like, oh, one more body and all this kind of stuff, and kind of fighting for her life, whatever else. You just have this kind of like creeping sort of menace, and be like, you can even see her almost be like, well, this can't be the thing, like, right. You know, this wouldn't even, as evidenced by her like running to her and be like, oh, I need to get help and I need to get this, and oh, I'm so scared and this, that, whatever, like, which is what you do to somebody you don't think of as being a threat.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's so cool, and they do a really good job of just tying that in. So yeah, so to Matt's point, it is so unexpected to have like a, you know, like an older lady in a brown sweater be your like villain, but it's like, but isn't that cool to like change that, you know, that thing up a little bit to really add that. And it's not the shocking sleepaway camp, it's a dude, you know, or like, oh, they were dead the whole time. It's not like that kind of a twisty thing, but it's more just sort of like the threat will look like anything kind of a bit. And just so much of that credit goes to Betsy Palmer for being such fucking amazing in this.
I do think it would be really funny still though to recontextualize these kills with a different camera angle to like see what these kids see, would, because you always get the POV of their scared face, but then when you realize what they're looking at is like a 40 something woman in a sweater.
Like, well, doesn't the first one or two of them, don't they go, oh, it's you, and then it's sort of like,
which also doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Like,
you know, again, this has got some slapdash elements for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, I completely forgot that Pamela does like a silly Jason voice when she's talking to herself. Completely forgot about that. I'm like, oh, she does get a little buggy. Like, because I'd remembered like her just being intense and like, they killed my boy, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, no, they definitely make sure you know that like she's gone round the bend by the end of it. Like, that's good. Oh, speaking of things around the bend. When owner guy is driving back in the rain, he passes a sign that says like Crystal Lake, I don't know, 12 miles, like Tomahawk Lake, like 24 miles. Has anyone ever done a parallel camp story with kids from Tomahawk Lake?
I don't think so.
Because I feel like you could have like an Ender's Shadow version of Friday the 13th, where these kids that are just a little, you know, 10 miles in the other direction, it's like, oh, all those kids are done and killed and cleaned up. And it's like, this other camp doesn't even know that's happening because this is pre-cell phone. And you can just have Jason in between one and two go over there and kill some people and come back. And I was like, someone must have done that, right? Maybe? I don't know.
I always like to think of the idea of like doing some kind of like coming of age dramedy about the town, one town over from Haddonfield.
Oh, God, yeah.
This is like all the shit's happening at Haddonfield, and over across the way, there's some people that are like finding their life, or like a widow like recaptures her zest for art, and like,
and you kids know, are just like, actually trick or treating,
and there's just like normal shit happening, and it's just sort of like, meanwhile, one town over, it's just like, it's a different sort of experience over there.
Well, it's like when you go to the mall and see a Pepperidge Farm next to a Hot Topic. Like, these don't belong next to each other.
It's like, this is all I need today. No, okay, so the TMTM on this is the tomahawk lake is shitty Jason. Things never break for him. They never go the way he's expecting them to.
So he is the Scream villain before the Scream.
Yeah, like stabs the arrow through the bed and there's nobody in the bed.
Nice.
Like, shit. And then just somebody comes in and kicks him in the balls. And, and he goes, because he's
I guess it'd still be Pamela in the first one, though. I guess I forgot about that. Shit. So yeah, that does make it extra. Well, then maybe you'd have to wait till it's Jason. He seems to be fine just killing everyone, regardless of who they are. Pamela at least sort of had an idea. Although I guess we need to at least mention the ending with the young Jason jumping out of the water to grab Alice.
Yeah, it definitely somebody really liked Carrie. Brian De Palma's Carrie.
Well, someone also just was like, maybe we can make another one.
Like we had to put a thread out there somehow. But also I think it is just we want to jump scare the one shit out of you scare. One last time. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the endings of each of the at least these first couple here, the ending always doesn't make a ton of sense. And then they're like flashback, slight editing in the beginning of the next movie is always a little like, I don't know if that's quite what that all makes sense, but we'll just
previously on Friday the 13th.
Kind of, yeah. Previously, and you're about to die. So, but yeah, man, this was just, this first one I think was just super fun. Like,
it's real solid.
I think it's going to make it into my rotation more frequently than it has, because I've always thought they were fun, but they've not been my favorite. I was always more into like Nightmare on Elm Street for the big 80s franchises, but I'm discovering that I was probably just being too cool for these, and they are a lot more fun than I realized.
Yeah, I think I would have to apologize to these films for thinking that they were as bad as their imitators. And have definitely been having a blast. I'm up to Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, eventually. That's my version of that title.
Seriously, a nosedive.
Jason Takes a Riverboat Cruise.
Yeah, so later we'll talk about those. But I haven't had one that I've just been like, well, that just kind of sucks.
You'll get there.
It'll happen.
Yeah, you'll get there. Spacing's pretty fun. But...
Well, then the next one, he gets to be a worm. How did he and Freddy both end up as worms?
I mean,
we'll all end up as worms eventually.
Oh shit, dude. See, there was something bigger going on behind these.
We all have a finite time on this earth, and some of us choose to spend that time podcasting.
Oh,
just a few heroes
just staring bleakly into their mirror.
The black
assuring mirror. Themselves. It must be worth it. Right.
Nice. Okay, so this one, like, I don't know. I wouldn't say that these are the best movies ever made, but they're substantially better than I think they have any right to be. And this one is probably in the top tier, he said, with many qualifiers. So I would call it a 7 out of 10, just like not out of the series, but just in its, as a movie, it's a 7 out of 10. It's a fun little thing.
There you go. I'm going to go just a titch higher. I'm going to give it an 8. I think it's just that this is refreshing in its kind of ramshackle craziness. And a lot of the things that, like we talked about, things that we kind of make fun of as being kind of tropey and shit aren't really present here. And there's a lot more just kind of gleeful dipshittedness of, you know, teenage / college kids, whatever, than there is like people that are insufferable and you can't wait to see them killed, which we get to later. So yeah, this just felt like a more fun movie of children being killed than a lot of others. So yeah, this is good.
Yeah, I think I'll kind of sit right in the middle. I'll call it, I think for this first one, I'll call it 7.5 out of 10. You know, just to enjoy things for what they are, take them for what they are. And if you just want to maintain some level of sanity and joy in your life, I would highly recommend not going on to Wikipedia and looking at the collection of critic reviews at the time, because it was just like the epitome of, I want to hear myself speak in mean ways.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, for God's sakes, like, you must be so dull. Like, how
and
boring
just
it must be.
Like, this absolutely depraved and lacking in any human interest in, like, sorry, I've seen Happiness.
Yeah, I've watched Triangle of Sadness. Come on.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
I actually really like that movie.
I still need to see that. That's probably
it's worth seeing. There's some amazing bits in there.
Did you say amazing or abasing?
Yep.
Okay. I figured.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next time, the only thing I would say for these folks is next time, strip Catan. Because like all the trading, you know, there's more opportunities.
You want to be able to bargain for titties.
Like start, I don't know, play a game that you would actually enjoy playing without the strip element, I think. And yeah, nobody like in their right mind is ever excited. Like if I met somebody whose favorite game was Monopoly and was always excited to play it, I would so never contact them again. That is the reddest red flag I can think of, is enjoying a game of Monopoly. Like playing Monopoly twice is a sickness.
Yeah, you might not be wrong.
Thank you for listening to my board game review podcast. as we should, let's take a quick break and then we'll do two and three.
Cool.
In a row.
Sir.
In a row? In a row.
In a row.
In a row.
So next up, we're going to talk about Friday the 13th part 2, and no power on earth is going to make me say Spanish word for 13th again today.
No.
Maybe next time we do one of these. But this one was a year after the first one, which these tend to come out a year apart, which is
with
crazy.
One exception, I think, for the entirety of the 80s. Is yeah. One every year, except for like 83 or something, or 84.
I mean, even the one that was the final chapter, the next one was a year after.
Next year,
it wasn't just like, it wasn't 5 years and it's a reboot, you know?
Yeah.
It was,
there's like a break between 3 and 4, I think. And then they're all just boom, 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 boom again.
But this so is weird. This is the only one that really picks up right after the previous, because we've got Alice, who is, you know, killed Pamela back in the day, is now back in her apartment, having barely recovered. And she then quickly gets ice picked to the head by somebody. We don't know who.
We do and need to point out real quickly during the flashback, when they show Pamela going like, ah, the counselors, my son drowned. Well, they were busy making love. And it really stuck out to me this time. Did she say making love in part one? That's not what you say if you're pissed off that kids were fucking and your kid died. Let's say they were making love. You said they were off fucking. Like maybe having sex if you're like super religious. Also, no one calls a college or high school kid ma'am. That's also weird. But anyway.
But yes, we do get a nice lengthy previously on Friday the 13th. This one continues the tradition of having like weird slow motion segments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Occasionally. That's definitely a trope that's in play. We just build on the template of the kills by having more of them. And you get like, I don't know why, but I'm fascinated by the level of kill. Because sometimes it's like, I'm going to rig up a thing and I'm going to make it so that when he steps through this door, the pipe that I've rigged to the wall is going to shoot flaming hot water up his asshole, right? And then sometimes he's just like, I crush your head. Yeah. There's never a, like, he doesn't have a motive, but there's also just levels of murders. There's always a couple of tier ones, a lot of tier twos, and then a couple off screens, right? But this one, I just had so much fun with the people. This was when I started thinking, like, these are just like kind of interesting and fun people to hang out with for a while, and then they get murdered. It's just like little murder short stories, and I kind of dig that. Mark, who is the guy in the wheelchair, and his like flirtation and almost score with that with his girlfriend is fantastic. I was like, those guys are the cutest people, and they are being surprisingly chill about the whole wheelchair thing for an 80s movie.
Yeah, that too.
I know, right? That is
nobody
the opposite
of
Revenge of the
Nerds
or whatever.
Once. Yeah.
Maybe he's in the Burger King Kids Club and they think that's super cool.
It's like it is not the defining factor of his character, which is the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
So they also, you know, they don't shy away from just putting a machete in his head and sending him backwards down an endless flight of stairs.
As I recall, was Adam Hollywood Dunn's favorite kill of the entire series. It was just tomahawking a machete into the dude's forehead and sending him backwards down his stairs. I'm like, yeah, it is just as ridiculous watching it again. Like it's
so long. He just keeps going.
The So I want to make sure I got this straight. So we, based on this movie, right, then the jump scare at the end of the last one is purely just like her being scared, right? Because mm-hmm. that's the wrong age for Jason, which means then that Jason has been hanging out in the woods but never like wanted to talk to his mom mm-hmm. for like 20 years. But then he's like, oh no, this girl killed my mom. Hey, that's an occupation, right? That's what grownups do. You have a job. I will be a killer. What?
Yeah. I think the important part is to not
I have no answer,
sir.
I'm
very
just
hard at all. Yeah. Because I'm sure if they could do it again, they would have had a fully grown man come out of the thing.
Well, it's like that fortune teller told me continuity and 25 cents will get you a cup of coffee. So.
Because. So Jason supposedly drowned in 57, right?
Mm-hmm. I think 58. No, the camp closed in 58, 57. Yeah. I think you're right.
So then we're like 20 years later. So he would be the right age for that, except he's a kid when he jumps out of the pond. So something wakes him up. And then over the course of that, the in-between movies, the universe rapidly ages him to the right age that he would have been had he not drowned in the lake.
Is that what we're supposed to think?
I don't think so, but it explains the phenomenon.
But then that doesn't explain, like, he has a lived-in shack.
He should be 20
years
old.
He's been doing this. But yeah, so it's like 58 to 79 for the first movie or 80 for this one. Like, he's the right age. I also do think it's really interesting in part two here and part three how much Jason is just a guy.
Yeah.
Like, there's moments where you see him, like, just hesitate for a second before taking a step or like fumble for a thing, and you're like, oh, that's just a guy doing that. Like, that's interesting, because again, that's not at all how we think of Jason, you know. Like, I don't think he runs exactly in any of this, but like, he has a sense of urgency sometimes that we don't think of as the like lumbering Jason,
because he's not yet undead Jason,
right?
Because that doesn't happen for a couple more movies. So he is just ostensibly a guy who everyone thought was dead when he was a child, and yet somehow survived and just had to live in the woods.
Ate animals in the woods, I guess. Yeah.
Because like, he wasn't in his right mind before he drowned. And,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
This dude had a rough go. Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had, it's funny how much worse the face makeup gets though as the series goes. Like, the more money they have, the more they're like, we're gonna make him look like Bigfoot fucked an otter. I'm like, okay. But why?
That's gotta be one of the things though, right? Like, when you find whoever's gonna do your effects for your Friday the 13th movie, they gotta be thinking like, oh, I wanna put my own little spin on it, right? Let them know I was here. You know, just like every new artist kind of slightly redesigns someone's costume in a comic or something. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, but at the same time, until he's undead and can kind of look like anything, just kind of having him look like a dude is probably fine. I don't know.
With a slightly messed up face.
Oh, man. You know what made this movie amazing? Fucking Ralph is back.
Yep. Oh, yes, indeed.
We get a second dose of Ralph until he gets choked out with, he gets garroted. I forget what he uses. But Ralph, we hardly knew you. So good.
Isn't his appearance on this one where he goes, you're doomed, you're doomed. And then he just goes, it's like, eat a dick. And he gets on his bike and tries to like pedal away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I thought that was.
It's like that moment that like in a movie, there'd be like, you're doomed. And then like a bus would go by and they'd be gone. But this guy's trying to do that in real life, which is you're just still there. You just gotta walk away awkwardly now. Like,
no, well, yeah. Crack's not going to smoke itself.
Yep. That guy can't afford crack.
Off we go.
Even in the 80s.
He's fantastic. He's quite the dresser.
Yes.
Snappy dresser. So yeah, this it's hard to say a whole lot about any of these in general. Like, but this one does have the possibly my favorite ending, too. I like this more than Tommy Jarvis's impersonation of baby Jason, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
Not so really, no.
This one, we get the final girl finding Jason holed up with his mom's head on like an altar. And that's fascinating. That gives us some flesh on the character. And then she impersonates the mom to confuse him long enough to get away. and then actually gets to cut him with the machete. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But just that whole, like, it's me, it's mommy, Jason. And he's like, mama. And yeah, it's beautiful.
That probably well, and Jenny, too, this is where he really stepped in high gear in terms of the, I am fighting for my own life. I'm not just going to be like, oh, golly. And then just sort of just wiffle across the thing until you kind of like almost get killed. Like, she has a lot of fight and a lot of perseverance. And it's like, and again, it's one of those things you just forget that, like, oh, no, this is not just like a wilting flower. Like, this is somebody who's like actively trying to survive. And it's like, so I just keep thinking back to like this, to kind of overgeneralizing of all of them of this era being basically the same. And it's like, no, she's working there. And the scene in the bar where she's like, you know, she kind of is musing, you know, kind of the humanity of the whole thing, whatever else. And they're like, it's kind of gay. And it's like, well, you know, yeah. It's like, and it's just, there's something, there's like more like agency and like character building than you would sort of expect or would think that there would be, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, well, that's cool. It's just kind of neat about it. Like, it's neat.
This one reminded me that, you know, we've mentioned sometimes that like we think of things as being like the 70s or the 80s, but like real world timeline is fuzzier than that.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you get to, I forget her name now, the gal that has the little dog, Muffin, she looks like an 80s girl and everyone else still looks like 70s girls. And so did the cast of the first one. Because you got like Rosanna Dana and like Kevin Facon, the Shermanator. There's like a couple other people around. And then you have this one chick who's like tan and wearing like a body glove shirt or something before she goes skinny dipping after looking for her dog at eye level. Dogs don't exist at eye level. That's not how that works.
Right.
But I was like, oh, you are just from like a slightly different era. And it's like, it's interesting to see that starting to transform. Because in a couple of movies, we'll have the typical dumbass 80s kids we think of. But these first couple of movies, I think part of that being the whole thing where they all seem to kind of get along and they're not gross or weird about sex or like one guy being in a wheelchair. But they're all just kind of chill 70s teens. They're not dicks yet.
Right.
But that was also kind of refreshing watching these first couple, is I don't hate these kids as much as I thought I would. Oh,
yeah.
Speaking of the dude in a wheelchair, he keeps saying whenever like drugs or whatever come up, he's like, I'm in training. And like, his girlfriend is like, oh, we're going to go hook up. So she goes and like puts on her matching bra and underwear, because you got to do that. And then she puts on her fuck sweater. Then I finally realized, like, wait, what is he in training for? He never says, or is that just, I don't want to do drugs? And that's the way of not having to say, I don't like doing drugs.
That's what I thought about.
That makes more sense, yeah. I suppose. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So this one is among my top tier for the ones that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it does the same thing as the first one, but introduces like having a killer that you can show makes a difference. And then
Baghead Jason looks cool.
Yeah. Baghead Jason can get it. And by it, I mean, murder people.
Plus he and I both share a love for bootcut jeans.
I also very much enjoy just starting with that campfire scene where they like jump scare the kids, mm-hmm. because that is the most deranged shit, but that would absolutely have gone down in the 70s, 80s.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, even in like the mid 90s, when we did like a weekend at a camp thing as part of a school outing, absolutely one of the parents snuck off into the woods while we were all sitting around a campfire and then tried to scare us like that. Like, that's just what you go to camp for, I think, right?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So for me, this is probably my 8 for the week.
There you go. Yeah, I enjoyed this a great deal. I feel like this is one where they've got to be a little chuffed after making so much money on the first, so I feel like they do go a little bigger. And I think for the most part that works. I did get a bit of a chuckle out of like, let's go to town to the bar. And they go to this like dinky little thing that says casino on it. Does casino mean something different in other parts of the country? Does that just mean bar places?
You would think.
Because no one's gambling, I don't think. And I was trying to figure that out. Or if they were just like, look, there's a bar in there, we can shoot here. That's fine. But then one other thing I want to mention before I give my score here. There's a scene where, I can't even remember who they killed. But they're getting dragged like downstairs. But you can see from like the shot, it's just like the legs and the body. But you can tell the body is being dragged down the stairs face down. Ooh. Which is such a smart touch, because that implies this complete lack of empathy, and you know, like, oh, it's not someone being dragged to assistance, right? It's like, yeah, this is just meat now. And I was like, oh man, that does give this a little more, like, And so, yeah, this one I thought was fun. It's definitely got some of the silliness that you kind of want from a movie like this, but again, like, these are characters I liked. So yeah, I think for me, this one, yeah, this might actually just stay right up at an 8 as well. This is a hoot. I think you could do very well with a double feature with 1 and 2 here.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of just way more agency than you remember. And the thing that Jenny does with the sweater and pretending to be the mom, whatever else, is pretty, like, you know, I don't want to oversell it, but it's kind of haunting in a way. Like, it's just like, ugh.
Well, the desperation of that.
Yeah, man. It's just like, ooh, there's something kind of rattling about that, and it's just sort of like, there's an intensity to that part of it. It's like, man, that's very heavy. So it's, you know, so you had those moments for sure. And then there's just silly bits where the machete to the fell in the wheelchair, and he keeps going. I kept thinking that clip that Paul Rudd always gets Conan O'Brien with from Mac and Me, where the kid the wheelchair on the thing. It's like, I mean, think of that. But yeah, no, so it's like, it's and also too, and I could absolutely be wrong about this, but I think the bit at the beginning, the kind of like the here's what happened in the first one kind of thing, mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident that a lot of that is, those were things that were like reshot.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident they're if not all of them, they're mostly reshot, which is funny if you watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, then watch Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, where like, if you watch 2, it's like, it's just about 45% of the first movie. Just,
I remember that, like, there's, it's like an anime
the way that it reuses
footage. Yeah,
it's so weird. So like, so the fact that they actually did that in this is such an interesting thing. And then always hats off to Betsy Palmer too. It's just, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's, so I'll be a little bit lower on this one because I'm a little bit higher on the next one. So I'll say seven on this one. 7 out of 10. When she holds up the underpants that she's got to change into, whatever else, and then like that satiny kind of poofy butted things, and you're like,
weird 80s underwear.
It's, yeah, like, it has like a pull strap for like a parachute, and then like has this thing, and it's like this is like a designing women sort of thing.
Well,
happening.
You can,
like,
see why all these kids want to get their clothes off as quickly as possible, because none of that's sexy.
You've seen their clothes.
Like, just like, yeah, this girl's got a nice butt. We're gonna make it look like a weird throw pillow, I guess. I don't know what's going on around here. But yeah, I'll say 7 out of 10 underpants and doom.
Underpants of doom. Do, 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 do.
Hun may starch the underpants of doom.
There is no fly in the underpants of doom. Let's talk about, speaking of underpants, let's talk about Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D.
Oh. Yeah.
I was sad to note that the rental version of this, like the digital rental, doesn't have the 3D element. Mm-hmm. But then I just got the delight of just sometimes things are in really sharp focus in the foreground while the background's all blurry, and
yep,
the thing that's poking is a knife or a stick or like
that snake that has a visible ass wire.
Yep.
But there's an early scene where it's just a yo-yo.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like the girl is playing with the yo-yo as she talks to the guy so that she can just drop it in our faces several times.
Well, remember when we watched that like black and white movie from like the 40s maybe that was in 3D, and they had the dude with like the, you know, that game with like the paddle and a ball attached to it.
Yeah.
And like all these cheesy 3D gags that we made fun of in all these movies in like the 80s and shit. They've always, just every 3D movie ever does dumb 3D stuff. There is no cool 3D. It just isn't. It's only for stupid little gags. So like, it is really funny to watch in 2D. Oh, by the way, speaking of the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord earlier, as that podcast is going through all the Final Destination movies, they hit the 3D Final Destination. And in the 3D Final Destination, there's a scene where the characters are watching a 3D movie. And when and then it's, you know, the movie they're watching is blurry because it's supposed to be 3D, and we as the audience are not wearing glasses. Right. And so Troy, of course, goes, so wait, if I were wearing 3D glasses watching this movie now, would that be in 3D? And handily enough, published fun paid Wintern Christian LeBlanc does 3D conversion. Huh. So if you want an actually really fascinating like breakdown of how different types of 3D work and what you'd have to do to make that happen, and if it would have when you saw it originally in theaters or not, he just like rattles off like paragraphs of, like, here's one way to do it, here's this, here's how they did it, here's why that wouldn't work, here's what you could do to make that effect. And it was like all of us were just kind of like, despite being in our various different locations from the internet, you can just see everybody's like jaw hanging open like, holy shit. We got actual facts about a real question. Like, that's not how the internet's supposed to work. So, yeah, that's fascinating. Call that reason number two to go to the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord. But anyway, yeah, the 3D stuff is fun but dumb.
As is the rest. Go ahead.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Sure. No, this one is a little goofier. You know, a little goofier, and part of it is that yeah, you have to stop and do like the laundry pull, and then the yo-yo, yeah, and then the juggling bit, and this the spear gun later on, and stuff like that, and it's all silly, but it's sort of like that part of it aside, I actually kind of like this bunch even more than two, in terms of the people. Like, for, I don't know why exactly, but I like this bunch more. Partly like, was it the scene where with the brunette lady and Shelley, where they're like, you know, like, you know, she's who he's being set up with, or vice versa, whatever else.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
And that whole kind of thing. What I love is that, like, and again, going into the more subsequent movies and all that kind of thing, or other kind of movies and also Rams and stuff, that like they absolutely would have been like just ridiculing him upside one side down the other and this, that, whatever. And it's more just sort of like, oh, he does these kind of dumb things and this, that, and the other thing. But at no point is it ever like, oh, he's ugly, he's fat, he's whatever else. He's self-deprecating. But it's kind of like, it's one of those things like, am I actually watching a thing from like the early 80s? Because it doesn't feel like that. And like, there's a bunch of moments like that in this that are like, oh, these like funny little character moments that, you know, sort of kind of escape your memory over time. But then conversely, you have this whole sort of side thing of like this, like the kind of cuddly church group biker gang who are menacing the local convenience store, and there's a little misunderstanding, a little altercation, and this, that, whatever, and then they come back, and then it's sort of like there's like a fake out for just a moment that they're it's the killers or else, but it's just them like trying to steal gas, and then they just kind of like, they're like, oh, we should just do some poking around. So like, they all kind of get
stabbed in here.
They all kind of get dispatched pretty well. But you know, for my money, again, in the daylight thing, when the lady biker lady is doing a little thing where she's swinging on the rope, and it's like, I'm swinging, and he just looks up, looks away, and looks back, and then she's like, the rope is still swinging, but she's not there, and you're like, yeah, like that just still gives me a little bit of a yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. My note on those guys was like, so were they trying to like decide if they should be punks or bikers, and just said, both?
Like, we're pikers, sir.
Yeah, they're just like, they're kind of that.
Bunks, but that
yeah, didn't. They're that 80s annoying, like,
like punks.
God damn it. The 80s annoying, like, shrillness of punks sometimes, but then dressed closer to bikers, but they're not. I don't know. I ended up calling him Tyrese, Bob Odenkirk, and Rosario Dawson. My notes. So,
what I love, their level of menace, because what I love is their level of menace is like, if you watch, you know, like watch like Return of the Living Dead, and it's like there's a level of like meanness and violence and kind of like menace to some of them in that one that feels a little more visceral. Whereas this bunch, it's just sort of like, it's like, oh no. Like,
yeah, this is right out of Central Casting.
Yeah, it has that kind of feel to it, but it also does that neat trick that the 1,000 More movies do, which is like, how do we add more bodies? Like, this is how we add more bodies. And it's like, and that's basically the purpose of it. Like,
yeah, if three people with no introduction show up. Yeah,
yeah. It's like, if there were going to be more plot, there would be more. You know, it's like, you know, like if you invented Facebook, you would have invented Facebook. Like, if they were going to be part of the plot, they'd be part of the plot. But they just were not. You know, you just kind of. It's just one of those things that. So that part of it always amuses me. But like beyond that, I like this bunch. more for whatever reason. I kind of enjoy this group of people. And it's also interesting to kind of get to where the callbacks in terms of what people are doing and their behavior and this, that, whatever else. And then there's some bits of this that I always get a little bit nervy, like with the thing when the power goes out and they're like the people keep discovering things at sort of different intervals. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, oftentimes that just plays silly, like you're watching Clue or the play that goes wrong or something. But in this, it's like there is a little bit of an ease to or a nerviness. At least I've kind of felt with it, where especially when the legitimate pain and terror that Shelley has on his face when he kind of flops into the doorway and the neck wound and you quit it, and he's just like, and he's just like, God damn, like that's a little heavier than what it would be. And I feel bad for Brunette Lady gets shot in the face with a spear gun, because she seemed all right.
Not a lot of fun.
And she made the mistake of having a fishing line connected to her at all times that was connected to a spear gun, though, so she knew that was going to happen at some point.
Yeah, I suppose.
That is the thing about watching these more in a higher definition. And it's just like watching the remaster of Phantasm years ago. And we're like, there's shit in that basement. I couldn't see that before. Watching this 20-something, 30-something years ago, whatever else, you wouldn't have seen the damn line because the film quality is shit. But you watch it now, you're like, yep, it's pretty evident. It's like, oh man, and then the introduction of the mask, that's another thing that's because this is the first time I really enjoy that it was just sort of like, it's like, oh, there's a mask, I'll put on the mask. I like
it makes sense that in this place, like it's in New Jersey, that there would be some hockey going on, and that somebody would have an old mask in their barn for sure. I guess I can forgive Shelley for a lot of his bullshittery for giving us the mask. I did not enjoy him. And it's probably because of how close I probably was to being him when I was like 12, 11 or 12. So it was just like, God damn it, why can't you be normal? the meme from the Babadook, where the kid, can't you be normal? Who knows?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I thought the audio cut out. Yeah. I actually thought I think you mentioned it earlier, Josh, like they are surprisingly kind when he's doing stupid shit to just be like, look, man, just, you don't have to try so hard. Like you're cool. Just hang.
Yeah.
You know,
like, that's what I mean.
Not like, even, they don't even scream like be normal. They're like, just, it's cool. We can just sit around, you know? I do think
his hang, do you mean put a whoopee cushion under you?
Yeah. The dude that is like,
bless you.
Compelled to do murder pranks in a horror movie is pretty contrived, but like fine. You know, like that's okay. I do think even when Jason gets the mask, like because of I even have the note, I think I figured it out, it is the speed changes where he's certain and going, and then he's a little like confused for a sec, and then he's like looks angry or aggressive, and then other times he looks like he's just doing his thing. It's none of it's as consistent as you get to, or at least the way I picture in my head, that the amalgamation of all of them. So we get the look by the end of this, but he does still feel like a dude.
He's not undead yet.
Is 4 where we get Kane Hodder?
Later than that.
Yeah, he comes in.
He also just gets bigger. You know, he's not a huge guy in these.
Yeah, by the time Zombie does his, he's like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, and he's also just built. You know, he's a big dude with like a barrel chest and stuff. And here he's like, you know, probably about my height and certainly in better shape, but he's not like a guy that would really, he wouldn't stick out if he was just walking through a mall, I don't think.
Right.
You know, and later, like, you'd get a guy like, oh, he must play sports. Like, you know.
There's John Cena is under there. What is happening?
There you go.
Well, and this one really continues along, or continues the women actually, you know, kind of having agency and fighting for themselves, because Chris, you know, played by Dana Kimmel, is like she's great. Like she's just like resourceful and sharp and like seems to have like a head on her shoulders and stuff. And I'm sort of like, so when you have her as a central character who's like not the shrill stereotype or not the slutty stereotype or not the whatever, it's like she's like a lady. And it's like, huh, well, a son of a gun. It's like, again, your memory fails you. It's like, I didn't remember that she was actually like a character. Like, what a crazy thing that is. So I don't know. It's just like, I keep going back to this, but it's just like, I've really enjoyed that. Like that little bit of like failed memory has been filled with like, oh yeah, though they were trying a little harder to give a little bit more to these female characters and just not accidentally kind of stumbling into, winning. It's just sort of, I don't know. It's pretty cool. Like this is cool to see that level of fight. And yes, this one has a lot of silly nonsense as well, but for sure. But, I do notice too, I don't know if you guys noticed from 2 to 3, whereas like 2 has some darker kind of eerier moments. This one starts to look more like a movie film for theaters in a way. Like this one, like there's some scenes where the way it's lit and the way, you know, like the way it's shot and the way it's lit or whatever, you're like, it actually could be passed off like a movie. Like it does look like an actual movie. And it's like, and I don't even say that to be mean. It's just sort of like, it just, there are parts of this that shoot and move like a movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, good. Maybe it was just because of the 3D thing, because they spent most of their budget on that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I was really surprised with both 2 and 3 as the, and kind of going on up the, all through 4, 5, and 6, a lot of the kills are at night and a lot of the scenes are at night, but they don't go for the like realistic night and they don't do day for night either. Mm-hmm. They just light the scene so you can see it.
Yeah.
And it's that, like, where does the light come from? Same place the music comes from.
Like, yeah, just like there's always a couple
repeat to yourself. It's just a show. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's always a couple lights behind trees in a forest. Like, don't know why. Like, it's fine. Yeah,
now it just kind of makes me mad about modern movies when I can't see stuff.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if they could do that for 50 cents and like a wooden nickel, you could probably do that for your blockbuster. Just, it's okay if we can see things.
Yeah. There's been a couple of, really great like articles and a couple of videos I've watched lately where people are kind of starting to decry they usually just call it Netflix lighting or streaming lighting, where everything is lit equally and flat. So there's never like someone's face half in shadow. There's never, you know, moody lighting that makes one part of the room look a little more mysterious or something like that. It's just like, nope, let's make sure all this looks like it's walking through a, you know, Joanne Fabrics with fluorescent lighting. You can see everything just fine. Like, well, that's not interesting though. Like,
and then on the other end, you got the Game of Thrones final season model where they're like, unless you have a brand new TV that has been calibrated like this, you won't see shit.
It's weird, man. And it's usually, I don't know, like the low budget stuff, maybe that's a thing, is like you have to have enough money to make your thing look plain. But like the low budget stuff usually looks more interesting and dynamic. I don't know.
And it might be, you know, and I want to pick on him because he's not a bad dude, but Joe Bagos's one from a few years ago, was it something Bloody Christmas, like kind of slashery Christmassy one that he did. So like recently there was the Silent Night, Deadly Night sort of, I'm going to say remake, but that's really not true because they really did a whole other thing with the story. I can't imagine that the Silent Night, Deadly Night one had too much bigger of a budget. I mean, maybe it had a little bit more, but it had too much more than Bagos's one. Bagos's one, half the time you can't see a goddamn thing, and it's very kind of crunchy and not the ways that I enjoy, versus this new Silent Night, Deadly Night remake, which is like, I really dug a lot. And like I said, I don't think I had a lot of money, but they just sort of, when the parts that are darker and, you know, things that are going on, you can actually see things that are occurring. Mm-hmm. And I always think, I always think of The Witch, where like, you know, Eggers' budget was, you know, was a few hundred thousand or something like that. And that movie kicked the snot out of things that had $80 million budgets there, like period things. So like,
and that he was using natural in camera lighting and it was still easier to see than a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff.
So yeah, I don't think it's one of those. It's more a matter of like effort and vision than really than using the crutch of saying the the money part of it. That's just sort of one of those things. I just think, you know, and also too, if anybody gets a chance to see the new Silent Night to the Night remake, I want to talk about it with somebody because nobody's seen it.
I'll make sure I find it because it did not get to a theater within an hour of me.
Oh, Christ.
So, yeah, I was mad. I keep finding that if I'm lucky, something goes for like one day in Eden Prairie, which is like 25 minutes away. And like, that's it. That's the only one that gets it for a lot of this shit, for at least for like AMC stuff in the cities here.
That was the funny. That was the funny thing with that one, for because for up until like the day and a half before, it was only going to be in three theaters, and they were like the furthest theaters geographically from where I am, that are still within like the, you know, Travis County. And it was sort of like, but then like a day before, day and a half before, they added a couple closer. I was like, oh, thank God. Because I was going to drive my ass out 20 some odd miles away, because I'm like, I want to see it, damn it. I don't want to have to drive all the boonies, but I guess I'm gonna. And then they added ones closer, like, oh, thank you. And then me and seven other people got to see it, so I'm sure that was very profitable for the theater. But you know, but yeah, no, so I, you know, this one does have that movie film for theaters kind of look about it. I just wanted to make sure I didn't forget to mention that.
Yeah.
So, also, my favorite part of this is the store owner guy and his wife.
Yeah.
At the beginning. I could have gone for more of them. I just really liked the vibe that they were putting off.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Oh, otherwise, like, this is a slightly lower than two for me. I think it just gets a little goofy with the 3D effects, and I think just my complete aversion to Shelley colored my perception of it quite a bit. But I would just say, like, for me, it's a 6.5 out of 10. Like,
there you go.
It's not my favorite, but it's better than some of them.
Yeah, there's a lot to like here still. I don't think it has quite the same charm, but then again, we're also going, okay, this, none of this is quite fresh, even, you know, trying to look at it without bringing all the baggage to it. But yeah, it's like, okay, we kind of know the pattern here. I think there's some good bits here. I think there's some kind of silly, dumb shit that is just like kind of shows you that this is still sort of a slapdash indie thing. Like, there early on, there's the one dude who like decides to taste the fish food, and he's like, ah, and it's like, that doesn't have any reason to be in this movie. That's like either the director or more likely that actor. We're like, I have an idea, it'll be hilarious, and you're like, yep, I bet you did think that.
This will get me more business. Give me,
but like shit like that doesn't make it past the idea stage in a movie that's like got people really trying to make sure it's getting tighten on budget, and they have a really solid script or storyboard or something that just made me feel like this still has some of that charm and looseness. And like, I think that's in there. I do think there's a scene where they have the destroyed bridge that looks exactly, I think, like the thing from Evil Dead, where it's almost curled up like a hand. And I was like, fuck yeah, movie. That's pretty rad. You know, and then Jason holding Rick around the corner.
Yeah.
To lure, is that's legit scary. Like, that fucking works. That's,
yep,
cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, because that is one of the ones from this one where I'm like, it's like, hey, just get a legitimate get to it.
And it's like, you know, and it sounds dumb, but like, it is surprising to be scared by these, because just again, with all the just cultural memory of it and having seen them and all that, it's like, oh yeah, if it still gets to you, that's surprising, but also, you know, hey, bravo, you know. Oh, speaking of which, I did forget that Pamela jumps out of the water at the end.
Yeah,
of this
for
one,
which no, is, nothing that passes understanding.
Which is great. So yeah, this is, yeah, I think it's starting to maybe get a little comfortable with its formula, and dare I say, maybe even getting to the point where they're a little overconfident. So it dips a little for me. So I'll say 7. I still had a pretty good time with this, and there's a couple legit scares, there's a couple good laughs. Overall, oh, the Tom Savini article is cute. I
yes.
thought that was fun. Yeah.
It's like, I'll just crack open the most recent episode of, or, you know, edition of Fangoria for whatever reason.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to be kind of in the middle there. I'm going to say 7. I was just momentarily distracted because I was looking at the listing for this. And also in 1982, there were such films as Poltergeist, Creepshow, The Thing, Halloween 3, Visiting Hours, Amityville 2, Cat People. Like, there's a bunch of other crap that came out in 1982. Like,
that's a hell of a good year.
Yeah, it's like a lot of, like, oof, son of a gun. But yeah, no, it's just, you know, it has a lot that I like in it. And I'm, even though it's dumb as a, you know, or was it silly as a barn full of clown pubes? Is that the the thing, the Pat Muswell.
Buttons, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of goofy stuff, mainly because of the 3D. I also think that because they did the 3D, it's like it didn't make it look more cinematic in some ways, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, I'm going to say 7. I'll say 7. I enjoyed this one. I think it's there's some things that I really like in it, and some things that just don't make a lick of sense, like the ending. But you know, it's like, hey, you take it for what it is. Like, they're cranking these out on a pretty steady clip at this point, and you know, learning as they go. I think all these guys, if you watch the documentary, they'll freely admit, like, yeah, we weren't sure how to do this, or we weren't sure how to do that. Like, we just kind of like the Kevin Bacon bit in the first one, where they're like, well, talking about an 80s thing, yeah, make it bit. But like, well, we didn't know what the fuck we're doing. We're just gonna,
I feel like every Savini interview from this era is like, yeah, man, I don't know. I just figured maybe this will work.
Yeah, him and O'Bannon and Nicotero, like, they all say the same damn thing. All of a sudden, like, yeah, we didn't know what the fuck we're doing. We tried this and it kind of worked. And like, okay, cool. Like, all right. Yeah, you crazy people. But yeah,
This is also the first of the series to leave Jason absolutely dead.
That's right.
He has really not sincerely dead. He's in the morgue.
He gets asked a difficult question.
But he doesn't get to do like the sit up or the vanish or the anything. He's just he's gone. Hmm. Gotta let him go.
Which they do a nice little call out for in Leslie Vernon too, of course, in the credits of that one. Sounds like good. Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll talk about our next set of films.
Yes, sir.
So next week, we have decided that we're going to kind of alternate our Friday the 13th so as not to overdose on them. So we are going to watch Dust Bunny. That's been getting a ton of buzz. We're happy to watch it. It's like a reasonably priced rental, so we'll be hitting that up on video on demand. We've got Queens of the Dead on Shudder. That's George Romero's daughter Tina's movie about drag queens and zombies, which is, I just watched. I loved it. And Toxic Avenger, which is on Hulu, and has all of the people that we love doing all the things we love.
It's so good.
Looking forward, like, I haven't seen it. I'm ready. Ugh. So Dust Bunny VOD, Queens of the Dead, Shudder, Toxic Avenger, Hulu. I've been Josh this entire time, and I will bid you a fondue.
And we will have a short. This short is not stop motion, sadly, but I can't just do all stop motion stuff. But it does have a cast and crew of senior citizens.
Hey! So,
all right.
Which turns out gives it a lot of charm, and I really like this. It is called The Rug. You can find it on YouTube. It'll also be on horrorshowhotdog.com, which will also have all the links to find us on all the various podcatching things if you'd like to use your preferred one, and we'll have the little link you can click to send us an email if you need to tell us some burning missive about how we were wrong about something, or have a good movie to tell us about. That's always fine. With all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie. Two super fast things. When Matt said the short is called The Rug, my brain went, I've heard you said The Rug, and my hands went, we should type that in our noodle notepad so we keep track of it. And so then my hands typed Thug. And I was like, nope,
yeah.
that's not anywhere close to that.
But if you put an apostrophe in there.
I just Thug. There's some D's and some vowels in there. The other thing, when you said the thing about having senior citizens, it just reminds me that if anybody out there has not watched the delightfully ridiculous Cockneys versus Zombies, I would highly recommend that you do it, because in terms of all zombie gags and all the different things, they're slow zombies, and the old man
in the walker.
Garden area, the walker, like, trying to walk away from the zombie who's walking slow, and just turn around going, fuck off! And, like, walking. It's just one of my favorite zombie bits of the last 20 years, easy. And if you've not watched Cockneys versus Zombies, it goes a little off the rails at times, but it's really, really, really fun. So if you need a good dose of people you can kind of understand what they're saying at times, but it's a big amount of fun with a lot of heart.
That reminds me, I saw someone on Reddit said, hey, I'm English and I have a Scottish friend. I'm going to recommend to anyone that has a Scottish friend, travel with them, because no one can understand them except you, but they can understand everybody, so you get to be Han Solo and they're your Chewbacca. That's so good.
Also, that just reminded me super fast, and we'll say goodnight here. My darling son has become quite the movie guy, and he's got become the kind of the go-to movie guy for a lot of his group of merry bands of nerds that he hangs out with in Colorado. And he has multiple times now gotten groups of people together to show them the best zombie musical, Scottish zombie musical set at Christmas time on the apocalypse. He's gotten groups of people watching this now, and now he's got people that are like listening to the music and do the things. I'm like, you're doing the Lord's work, child. I was like, well done, buddy.
If it's horror related, it's the Gord's work because of the Great Pumpkin being our god.
Well, fair enough. The Gord's work. I
started using that in conversation just to confuse people. You're doing the Gord's work. What?
Well, now the other thing is Shiny Ribs, the guy from the lead singer from the Gords. That's what we're the band, the Gords. But we don't have time for any of that shit. Everybody take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll talk towards you again. We'll talk towards you again real soon. Sorry for the delay, and we'll try to be a little faster next time.
Maybe.
Okay, bye.